This is Schooled Rewired, a podcast from WHYY News. This four-part series examines how technology is reshaping the educational experience in Pennsylvania public schools. This podcast features reporting from the 2025-2026 school year. Schooled is made possible thanks to support from the William Penn Foundation. I'm Kenny Cooper, the host and reporter for this podcast.
It is 12:22. So we are wrapping up lunch and learn here in 2 minutes. Everyone's transitioning to class. And you may see one or two, you know, but you're not going to see the masses, and that's the point. First thing, I walk. Hello, how are you?
Hi, good, how are you?
This is Joe McNamara's third year as principal of Radnor High School in Delaware County. We're walking the hallways on a hunt.
Here. Hello. That looks delicious. Where is that from?
Mama's.
What is it?
Down that way,
right next to Honey Barrel Donuts.
Oh my gosh, is that new?
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
Oh, I got to try that out.
We're not looking for lunch. We are actually searching for something we don't want to find. Cell phones. They're not allowed in this school. They must be off and away the moment the bell rings in the morning to when school finally lets out in the afternoon.
So, if you take a look here, and you see kids now walking, transitioning, 1100, and I've looked for hands, and I see nothing. This is how you know it's working.
For many kids, phones are the portal to their entire world. Phones connect them to everything, from friends and the latest memes, to advice and information. Every moment is documented.
What's up, Prez?
Everything is shared. But phones can also be distracting, especially in classrooms. They have been linked to shrinking attention spans and mental health issues, which is why many schools in Pennsylvania are desperate to get rid of them and have come up with policies to limit their use or ban them altogether.
There's the bell, a couple stragglers. But in this time, ladies, how are you?
Good.
In this time, not a single phone.
From the newsroom of WHYY, this is Schooled, Rewired, a podcast documenting the story of Pennsylvania's public schools through the eyes and ears of students, parents, and teachers. I'm Kenny Cooper. This season, we explore how technology is changing the way students learn, for better or worse. This is Episode 1, The Cell Phone Experiment.
Senators will take their seats. All persons not entitled to the privilege of the floor will please be seated in the gallery.
Harrisburg is where bills go to die. In 2025, Pennsylvania legislators passed the fewest number of laws in at least a decade. At the same time, a four-month budget stalemate halted the stream of billions of dollars in state funding to critical infrastructure, including schools. In 2026, the political gridlock is still there. However, one issue has united lawmakers from both parties all the way up to Governor Josh Shapiro. During his budget address in February, he made a plea to lawmakers.
Supporting our kids means investing more dollars in our schools and ensuring that they have a healthy, productive learning environment. One way to do that is to get the distraction of cell phones out of those classrooms.
Later that day, the state Senate made a move.
On Senate Bill 1014, the clerk will call the roll.
Argle. Aye. Baker. Aye. Bartolotta. Aye.
The Senate passed a bipartisan bill to ban cell phones bell to bell in Pennsylvania's K-12 schools.
I hope that our friends in the House will quickly move the gentleman from Allegheny County's bill through their chamber to put it on the desk of His Excellency, so His Excellency can sign it, and we can show that we have worked together to deliver this piece of legislation. Thank you, Mr. President.
In June, the State House passed a similar bill. A bell-to-bell ban means the devices would be unavailable to students throughout the entire school day, including lunch and recess. Implementation of the proposed ban, including how schools would store the phones, would be up to the individual districts. Cell phone bans are spreading like wildfire. According to Education Week, 38 states and Washington, D.C. either ban or limit cell phones in classrooms as of May 2026. How did cell phones become public enemy number one? And what does a ban look like in practice? This is why I went to Radnor High School, to walk the halls with the principal.
Hey, how are you, sir?
I'm good.
Cell phones are not allowed at this school. Kids must turn them off and put them away once the school day begins.
Joe McNamara, good to see you.
Kenny Cooper, nice to meet you.
Come on back.
Sounds good.
Before Joe McNamara became a principal, he was a teacher in Coatesville. And before that, he was a high school student, navigating the world of cell phones. Although, a much different world. Nokia phones were all the rage in the late 90s, heading into the early 2000s. Joe became a teacher in 2005, just 2 years before the release of the first iPhone. Back then, cell phones were not a huge distraction.
As technology has evolved and evolved and evolved, and social media more has evolved and evolved with Instagram and Snapchat and those different things, that's when it really started to be a really big distraction for students in the classroom and for teachers.
There was no singular incident that drove Radnor to expel cell phones. It was more like a million things.
So many things come into schools every day because there's conflict happening on social media that we're not aware of. Then it trickles into school, and we can't even get ahead of it. When you take away cell phones, now again, we can't control the before and after, but if we can control it in school, there's less conflict.
A dam of frustration built over years finally began to crack.
Educators would come to me and they'd be like, the cell phones are such a distraction. The kids are doing this and they're holding their classrooms accountable. But it was just something where if we didn't enact something that was more global, I guess you could say, then we were always just going to be spinning our wheels.
A partial ban took effect during the 2024-2025 school year, starting with pouches to store the phones in.
But what we realized as we were going through this, that kids are clever. They were putting calculators in there. They were putting burner phones in there. Like, they were getting around the system, you know? Well, listen, we have very clever kids here at Radnor High School. And, you know, so we just realized it wasn't necessarily working to the highest level that I thought it was.
After months of focus groups and discussions, administrators decided to take a different approach. The policy was simple. A bell-to-bell ban with a caveat. Phones just had to be off and away. The school moved away from pouches and decided to put their trust in students to keep cell phones out of sight. This could mean in a backpack or a locker or even a pocket, just not in hands. Violators would be disciplined. Before the 2025-2026 school year, administrators began notifying teachers, and then student council leaders like seniors Veer Garr and Isabella Bucci.
I remember that Zoom call exactly that day. Like, at that moment, we just looked at each other and we were like, oh, so this is happening.
Word of the ban spread fast. Veer says his phone was blowing up.
It was initially a big, huge, controversial thing where people were initially very, very mad at this. You know, they were like, this is my phone. I should be able to do what I want with it.
The chatter eventually got back to Joe.
I heard, Kenny, that people were going to come to my door with pitchforks and hang me out to dry, you know? There wasn't a single kid who did that, you know? So it really transitioned well, and through my administrative team and our teachers being consistent and following this rule, this initiative, we are making gains.
Freshmen and sophomores had an easier time making the transition because the new rule mimicked the policies from the middle schools. It was the seniors, Joe says, who actually had the toughest time. There was, and still is, some pushback from older students. However, there's been a gradual acceptance.
In the beginning of the year, it'd be like, why are we doing this? But as it's come down, I'll go talk to someone. They'll be like, hey, Veer, don't tell anybody this, but like, I kind of like this.
Joe says the impact on the way students interact with one another has been astounding.
But now it's just a part of our lives here, and this is what we do, and it's amazing for me to see when I'm walking the hallways, I see kids talking. I walk into our library during lunch. Kids are playing Jenga. They're doing puzzles. We have a whole Hacky Sack crew out here. Hacky Sack being back in the day. They brought it back, apparently. That wasn't happening before this.
He says the improvements have also extended into the classroom.
We see grades are increasing in the classroom, the local grades. So local meaning like in each individual classroom. We have a lot of teachers here. And we have a lot of electives. We have art. We have French. We have STEM guitar. I mean, there is a litany of classes here in this building, but we are seeing, when we're looking at the data, a decrease in overall failures.
He does not attribute all of the academic gains to the cell phone ban. He does believe the social benefits are very real. Isabella says that it has completely changed the social dynamic of high school. Burying your face in your phone during awkward moments is no longer an option.
It's allowed me to socialize in places and areas where I probably wouldn't have socialized if phones were a thing.
As lawmakers mull whether to pass a statewide cell phone ban, Joe says it is an opportunity for schools across Pennsylvania to unite on behalf of their kids.
I'm actually excited for that because it's no longer, well, this school district doesn't do it, and you're forcing our kids to do it, and kids are talking to each other, so it becomes this battle, right? Well, if everyone in Pennsylvania here to Pittsburgh are doing it, well, Radnor High School is no longer going to be off on an island by themselves.
Walking through the halls of Radnor High School, Joe and I pass crowds of students chatting during their lunch, hanging out, being kids.
You want to pop in a classroom?
Sure.
First page. As you read through the status table on the first page, what you want to be looking for is something.
We ended up ditching class after a minute, but Joe was happy with what we saw.
And we just walked into a biology classroom, and there was probably 25 students sitting there. Not a single student had their cell phone. And that's what we do here at Radnor High School. And I believe in it. I do believe in that cause.
This is Schooled. I'm Kenny Cooper. We're talking about cell phone bans. Coming up, how effective are these policies? One psychologist says they could change social norms.
I think the challenge for these young people is that we have invented a temptation and put it in the palms of their hands and then made it normal to keep it in the palms of their hands at all times.
We'll be right back. This is Schooled, an education podcast from the newsroom of WHYY. I'm Kenny Cooper. We're talking about cell phones. Many schools are banning phones or want to put bans in place. But what do we actually know about the impact of these policies? Psychologist Angela Duckworth has been tracking that. She's a professor at the University of Pennsylvania who studies achievement, delayed gratification, grit, and the modern-day temptation of cell phones. Now she's leading a national study on cell phones in K-12 schools. As you probably already know, Pennsylvania is headed towards a statewide cell phone ban. What have you and your colleagues been studying?
It's called Phones in Focus. And the study really centers on a 5-minute questionnaire that we have up at phonesinfocus.org. And any school teacher in the United States is eligible to visit there and basically offer their perspective. What's going on at their school? What is their school's cell phone policy? And how's it going? And I'm happy to say that in this conversation, I can share with you some of the early findings because we now have over 100,000 teachers who have voluntarily donated 5 minutes of their time on this very important issue. And one thing that we've seen in our data is that even from last school year to this school year, there has been a sea change in the United States that schools are increasingly instituting stricter cell phone policies. For example, more high schools in the United States have a bell-to-bell policy than this time last year. The second finding I'll say is that when you look at different policies in schools across this country, the stricter the policy, the happier the educator. So the teachers who teach in schools that have bell-to-bell policies, for example, are overall more satisfied with teaching, and they say things are going better than schools that, for example, don't have a school-wide policy and allow each classroom teacher to, you know, figure it out on their own. And they're also happier than teachers in schools where you're allowed to use your phone, for example, in the hallway, during lunch, during recess, et cetera. And finally, I'll just say that we are finding that it also matters where students are allowed to keep their phone. So the farther the phone is kept away from the student, according to school policy, for example, you have to keep your phone in a hallway locker, or maybe it's collected at the beginning of the day and returned at the end of the day. It's really separated from you. Those teachers are happier.
Why this study? Why now?
I think that there is one particular individual who can take responsibility and credit for catalyzing this conversation. Not to say that there hasn't been growing concern among educators, among parents. I mean, it's hard not to have concerns about cell phones and social media when young people are spending that many hours on their phones and on social media. But John Haidt, who's a professor at NYU, wrote a book called The Anxious Generation. And when it debuted, it shot right to the top of the New York Times bestseller list. And then, unlike most thick nonfiction books that are full of graphs and tables, it stayed at the very top of the New York Times bestseller list, which I believe is where it is today. And I think that one book and that one person really catalyzed a conversation because he had a very provocative thesis. He called it the anxious generation because he pointed to data that says, and I believe this data, actually, I've looked at it myself critically as an academic, the data say that young people today are really anxious. They're not just anxious, they're depressed. They're not just depressed, they're lonely. They feel lost. And of course, to some extent, you know, we all think back at the time that we were young, you know, transitioning to adulthood and so forth, and we might say, oh, it's just the angst of growing up. But we have historical data, and now we can compare what young people today are like to young people from decades past. And this is a particularly miserable generation. And John Haidt wants to lay much of the blame at the feet of social media companies and cell phones more generally. And I want to say that I, you know, agree with John. I don't know that it's the only cause, but it's hard to believe that the mental health of young people has not been influenced by this invention that you and I, you know, didn't grow up with.
I'm very curious as to how you think your previous research as a psychologist intersects with some of the findings that you're already seeing from this survey regarding cell phones.
Prior to working on cell phones, I was working on self-control. You know, it's not that cell phones have created a self-control dilemma for young people that never existed, because young people since time immemorial have always had more fun and easier things to do than study. I can date all the way back to Aristotle, who said that the roots of education are bitter, even if the fruit is sweet. So when I was a public school teacher, I did teach in a charter school, Mastery Charter School here in Philadelphia. I taught in the New York City public schools. I taught in the San Francisco public schools. And that was in the 90s. And we didn't have cell phones to deal with. We didn't have social media. But there were always things that my students could do that were more fun, like look out the window or, you know, go play a video game when they got home. There are going to be these choices that young people have to make. What is fun for me now may not be what is good for me later. And all of us at any age have to do that as well. Like you can, you know, if you wanted to, have a cheeseburger and fries like every lunch and never eat a vegetable. Like that might be fun for you now. It's not good for you later. So what's new, though, about this dilemma is I think that we now have temptations that it has become a social norm to keep the temptation in the palm of your hand. Like imagine, for example, that you know that cigarettes are not good for you, but you really enjoy smoking them. Well, now we have a society, imagine that everybody's literally carrying around a cigarette lit in their hand at all times. And the job that you have is just not to smoke it. I feel like in some way, the ubiquitous nature of phones, I mean, how many people go to the bathroom these days without their phone? Like, pretty much everyone, including me, takes their phone to the bathroom, to dinner out. I was at a restaurant this past week and, you know, I sat down and there was a beautiful young couple and they were very nice. I could just tell by the way they were interacting with each other and with the waiter. But I think they spent 95% of that meal scrolling through whatever they were scrolling through on their phones, not talking to each other, not making eye contact. It was just such a bizarre thing, except that it wasn't bizarre, because when you looked around the restaurant, almost every table actually had their phones out, whether people were alone or together with others. So I think that in some ways, this age-old challenge that any person of any age has to deal with, you know, how do I do what's good for me now and good for me later? How do I do what's maybe hard now so that I can be better off later? I think the challenge for these young people is that we have invented a temptation and put it in the palms of their hands and then made it normal to keep it in the palms of their hands at all times.
Considering just the sheer amount of responses that you've already received so far from teachers. Was there anything redeeming about the cell phone in schools? Are we being too harsh on the cell phone? Is there anything that teachers brought up that was redeeming?
I will say this. I think that when teachers are telling us in the open-ended responses about the, you know, conflicting views that sometimes exist in a district, we've already talked about the downsides of having access to a phone. But I do think it's important to say that some teachers are saying that they do find some uses for phones, like students in schools that don't have any computers. If there's, you know, research to do, like, well, the students at this point in this country, the vast majority of them have phones. So it could be an alternative to that. I also think, and maybe this is the most important point, when you take cell phones out of a school, it doesn't make the school great. Because the school has to provide interesting and important instruction to be great. And so minus cell phones doesn't mean plus engagement, unless the teachers are, you know, introducing students to ideas and activities that are intrinsically motivating. And we know from separate research that in general, from fifth grade to 12th grade, it's a downward ski slope in how interested kids say they are in what they're learning in school and how useful they say what they're learning in school is. So there are challenges other than school cell phone policies that educators are facing. And I think if you remove cell phones and you're surprised to find that outcomes aren't better, what I think that is indicating is that there are remaining challenges that are not solved when you have a cell phone policy that works.
How should schools digest these findings? How should they respond to the prospect of a statewide ban on cell phones?
Now, as a dispassionate scientist, I'm, you know, supposed to be very hesitant to offer policy prescriptions. But I can say with sincerity, I think there are two things based on science that should inform policies. And I think if you think about them for a moment, they do incline you to support legislation as that which is being discussed in, you know, my home state of Pennsylvania. By the way, I was born in Philadelphia and living in Philadelphia. I feel a lot of loyalty to the Pennsylvania school systems in particular. I will say one thing is that this is a collective action problem. There are economists, including Leo Burstyn at University of Chicago, who have established using data that when you consider something like a cell phone, you could consider it as an individual challenge. How am I going to stay off of my cell phone? Or you can think of it as a collective challenge. How are we going to stay off of our cell phones? And this is relevant because in schools, you could say to teachers, how are you going to manage your classroom? Or you can say to a student, how are you going to use willpower to not go on your cell phone? Or you can solve this problem collectively. We're going to have a school-wide policy that makes it easier for everyone to stay off of their phones at once. And I think the scientific data would support those policies that try to get this to be solved at a collective action level. We are seeing in our open-ended responses from teachers that they don't want to be the bad cop anymore. They don't want it to be that, you know, you go to fifth period and you have Mrs. Duckworth and, ugh, she makes you put your phone away and she yells at you. Then you go to sixth period and that teacher doesn't care so much and, you know, you can take it out again. They don't want to be the individual who has to police the phones, you know, all on their own.
Angela Duckworth is a psychologist and professor at the University of Pennsylvania. She studies achievement, delayed gratification, grit, and she's leading a national study on cell phones in K-12 schools. I'm Kenny Cooper, and this is Schooled. We're exploring the impact of cell phones on learning and how schools are dealing with it. Coming up, could cell phone bans bring back the art of hanging out?
I've seen a great improvement in how kids are talking to one another and they're spending time with one another and they're really listening to one another and they're enjoying one another again.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Schooled. I'm Kenny Cooper. We're talking about the impact of cell phones on learning and what schools are doing to get their students' attention back. Five miles northwest of Philadelphia sits a relatively small town with a big name, Hershey. Founder Milton Hershey's name is on everything around here, from the world-famous chocolate company to the school. Sherry Taylor Stuckey has been a teacher for 39 years.
I started off in a small town in Ohio called Orville, Ohio, the home of Smucker's Jelly. And I taught there for 13 years and moved to Pennsylvania and have been teaching here ever since.
She's the English department chair at Hershey High School. Sherry recalls first seeing students pull out their cell phones in the late 90s.
It is many moons ago now, but I do remember seeing these cell phones, and I had one myself, but I think I remember thinking, what is this kid doing in my class with this cell phone? Like, why are they taking this out? And I think when things really changed was when you were able to text people, and then I saw the kids starting to text one another as more kids got cell phones.
She says things got a lot worse with the advent of social media.
Honestly, I became really frustrated. As a teacher, I felt like I was not only trying to teach this lesson and to engage my students, but now I had this outside thing that I had to figure out, and I didn't even totally understand all of its ramifications.
She was repeating lessons and constantly trying to corral students' attention. She says eventually she was forced to take matters into her own hands. She and her fellow educators came up with their own rules.
I tried all kinds of different things. I was like, hey guys, we're just going to put them away. So go ahead and put them away. I actually had these plastic bins in the middle of the tables. I have round tables. So I'd have the kids take those cell phones out and put them in there. Now, not all kids would do that. Sometimes I would have the kids turn them off and put them up front. They were called, I think, parking lots or something like that. They were these plastic bags that hung on the front of your classroom, and then there would be slots so the kids would individually put them in there.
But after years of having to self-police her own rules, Sherry was not confident it would be effective.
I'm going to be honest, I am a very positive person, but I was part of this conversation and I thought, this is great in theory, but how in the world is this going to work? And I could not, for the life of me, figure out how we were going to get 1,200 kids to buy into this.
But a few years later, Sherry is a happy camper.
And I've been pleasantly surprised. I have been very surprised.
Her classroom feels completely different.
Oh my goodness, it's been like night and day. Kids are now more focused on the learning that is occurring within the classroom. They are not being distracted by those devices and social media and technology.
More importantly, she says, they are talking to each other again.
I've seen a great improvement in how kids are talking to one another, and they're spending time with one another, and they're really listening to one another, and they're enjoying one another again. They're laughing. They're cracking jokes. It's been actually wonderful to see. And I think all of those soft skills are just so incredibly important as well.
Stacy has noticed improvements in other areas as well.
With social media, you never get away from it. You know, when I was a kid, something could happen during the school day and you go home and you don't see each other for 12 hours or more, and that cooling off period, right? And you get back the next day and you're like, maybe that wasn't that important. Can let that go. With social media, kids aren't getting that break, so we're giving them that break. And we have seen a dramatic reduction in spillover conflict because kids are able to just put it away and have that cooling off time.
Caleb Michael Tinsley is far from the biggest cell phone user, but he remembers pulling out his phone in study hall to play a few games. Although there are still a few kids who think the rule is, quote, dumb, Caleb says it has changed his classroom experience. He's reclaimed something he didn't know was missing.
I would say it improved it. I don't know if that's an unpopular opinion, but I truly believe it improved it. I really enjoy talking to people. Obviously, I yap too much, but no, but it's true. There's something that you lose when you're in a phone versus speaking to somebody, and I really think that I've gotten it back for my senior year, and I actually really appreciate that.
The conversation reminds Sherry why she became a teacher.
I see what young people are capable of. Many people have a negative view of our young people, but they are bright, they are intelligent, They have so much to offer our world, and if I can help them reach those goals, that's what I want to do.
Schooled is a production of WHYY News in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Kenny Cooper. I am a reporter for WHYY News. Our executive producer is Sarah Glover, WHYY's Vice President of News and Civic Dialogue. Our editor is Mada Smith-Abura, with additional editing from Mike and Scott. Mike Schiffler and Diana Martinez are our engineers. Our producer is Alan Tu. Fact-checking from Emily Neal. Research support from Natalie Tsukinaga. Funding for this podcast was provided by the William Penn Foundation. Please rate and review this show wherever you get your podcast and share on social media. Visit whyy.org for more education news. Thanks for listening.